I wasn't expecting this, but I got to officiate a wedding yesterday. And so I had a rehearsal on Friday night and the wedding last night. And the wedding was for a guy who I was his Young Life leader almost 17 years ago. And so lots of conversations Friday night and last night revolved around Young Life. And most of you have heard my story of coming to know Jesus, Jesus revealing himself to me through Young Life. And really, it was the ridiculous love of a father for a wayward son that captured my life then. And so I wasn't expecting the way that this morning would impact me. It's common to talk about this morning's passage that we just heard. Thanks, Allie, you did a great job reading. As three short stories. Jesus shares about a shepherd who leaves the 99 to find the one lost sheep. He describes a woman who searches the entire house looking for a single lost coin. And he tells the story of a father who eagerly watches for his lost son to return. A sheep, a coin, and a son. Sometimes we hear them all together, but usually we hear them individually. Each was lost, but now they have been found. And so, Jesus says at the end of each of these stories, rejoice. But if you think about Luke 15 as three neatly packaged stories, then verse 25 is where things start to get a little bit confusing, and maybe you noticed it, because verse 24 is the perfect ending to this series of three stories. I want you to notice this morning the brilliant way that Jesus strings these stories together, moving us, drawing us in, building to the climax of the third one. So, in verse 6, if you have your Bibles open, the shepherd says, rejoice with me, for I have found my sheep that was lost. And then in verse 9, at the end of the second story, the woman says, rejoice with me, for I have found the coin that I lost. And then Jesus follows both of these stories of the sheep and the coin with a little comparison. In verse 7, Jesus says of the found sheep, he says, just so I tell you, there will be more joy in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous persons who need no repentance. And then in verse 10, Jesus says of the lost coin, he says, just so, again, right, making a comparison, I tell you, there is more joy before the angels of God over one sinner who repents. Are you picking up what Jesus is laying down through the first two stories? Right? Jesus takes these simple stories of a sheep and a coin, and he draws an unlikely connection to a completely unrelated idea. Jesus compares being lost to being a sinner, someone disconnected from God. And he compares being found to a sinner repenting and turning their life back to God. These two stories then, these same themes, same connections, set up perfectly the third one. In verse 11, we read, Jesus introduces now, not some random thing to connect to a sinner, he introduces us to a good old-fashioned sinner, lost in the world, lost in his rebellion, and lost in his rejection of his father's love. But like the lost sheep and the lost coin, the son is also found. The son returns home and is reunited with his father. And like the shepherd and the woman, the father calls on his friends. He calls on his family. You need a crowd to rejoice like this, and he needs them to rejoice with him. Let us eat and let us celebrate. Do you see what's happened? He says, for this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost, and is found. The final line in verse 24 says, and they began to celebrate as they should. Like those in heaven who have joy over one sinner repenting, like the angels of God who have joy over one sinner repenting, the Father's family and friends, they begin to celebrate. And at this point, Jesus has told three neatly packaged stories designed perfectly to bring us to this place of celebrating a sinner repenting. Have you ever been watching a movie and all of the conflict seems to have worked itself out? And the movie settles into a satisfying conclusion. And then you look at the time and you realize there's 30 minutes left. And you start to panic. Ah, something's about to go terribly wrong. That's verse 25. Now his older son was in the field. We're not done yet. In other words, the older son hasn't started to celebrate yet. Now, we don't know his deal at this point in the story, but something is going on, right? Our neat little package of three lost and found stories is falling apart. And I want you to hear this final section with me again, and I want to point some things out along the way. I want you to notice what's happening. Verse 25, read along with me. This is out of the ESV translation. Says, now his older son was in the field, and as he came and drew near to the house, he heard music and singing, music and dancing. I don't know why I went with singing. But what does the older son find here? The beginning of the celebration that we just heard about. A sinner has repented, and so earth is joining with heaven in celebrating what is happening. Friends and family are rejoicing along with the angels of God. This is a holy moment that's begun. And in verse 26, we read, and the older son called one of the servants and asked what these things might mean. Now, the older son clearly has no idea what's going on at this point. He's been hard at work in the field serving his father. And he's confused, and he needs someone to explain to him what's happening. Verse 27, and the servant said to him, your brother has come, and your father has killed the fattened calf because he has received him back safe and sound. The older son is hearing the gospel. He's hearing the good news. This is literally the textbook definition of gospel. Gospel is good news. Not just like a good message, but it is news. It's an announcement. News is an announcement that some sort of event has taken place. Something has happened. And now everything will be different as a result of this thing that's happened and that's being proclaimed in the news. But he hasn't just heard any news. It's good news. Your lost brother has returned from the dead. He finally saw the error of his ways. He didn't wait until it was too late, but he is here. And not only that, but your father didn't reject him, but he welcomed him home with open arms. And now your family is being restored. What is broken is being healed. Heaven rejoices when one sinner repents, and so should the earth. And so your Father has announced a celebration of heavenly proportions. The older son hears the good news. And we read in verse 28, but he was angry. And he refused to go in. All is not neatly packaged. Where heaven and earth are in agreement over this younger brother's return, his brother isn't there. His brother can't agree. The older son hasn't been like the shepherd looking for his lost sheep. He hasn't been like the woman searching her home for her lost coin. This older brother, this older son has been watering, cultivating a different kind of life, a different kind of spirit in his brother's absence. He walks in the way of Cain, Adam and Eve's oldest son, the older brother of Abel. Jealous of his brother, Cain, we're told, is angry because of the attention that his younger brother gets from God. Now, it's probably important for us, right, to point out that this isn't simply the older brother's gut response in this moment, but this is the kind of fruit that the older brother has been cultivating for years. Right, having watched his father day after day in agony, looking down the road, watching and waiting and longing for his younger son who betrayed him to return, having seen his father's pain so acutely, having felt his own pain of betrayal by his brother, this older brother has lived with resentment. A root of bitterness has taken hold of his heart. And now we see the fruit of this life. We see the fruit of the way that he has lived. He cannot rejoice with heaven and earth. Like Cain, the older son is angry. And if you know the Cain story, you start to worry. Will this older son kill his brother who has just found new life? Suddenly we realize we're in the middle of a fourth story. The older son, angry and refusing to come into the house, is lost. He is just as lost as a son who takes his stuff and goes off and leaves. The older son stands outside of the home. Relationship is broken as he's filled with anger toward his brother and his father. To use older language, the older son is living in sin. And we like to reserve that phrase for a couple shacking up together before marriage, or a person who's caught up in sex, drugs, and rock and roll, or whatever the kids are listening to these days. But this son is out of sync with his father. He's out of sync with heaven and earth. He is separated from his father and from his brother, and this is the very definition of sin. This is the heart of sin, fractured relationships with God and with our neighbors. But of course, the same father who day after day looked longingly down the road for his lost son to return, he hears from someone that his other son is now lost. And so you can guess what he does. He comes to him and he begs him, for he wants only one thing: for the lost to be found. Verse 28, we read, his father came out and, this is a good old word we don't use, entreated him, begged. And he answered his father, look, these many years I have served you, and I've never disobeyed your command. Yet you never gave me a young goat that I might celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours came, who has devoured your property with prostitutes, you killed the fattened calf for him. If you've never heard this passage before, it may not be obvious, but from the earliest days of the church, followers of Jesus have recognized God and the Father in this story, which makes the brother's response really interesting because he declares, I have never disobeyed your command. Never? Those are strong words. Bold. Because if we substitute God in for the Father just for a second, we notice that this claim in his own words in this passage is surrounded by disobedience. Listen to the son. These many years I have served you, yet you never gave me a young goat that I might celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours came, you killed the fattened calf for him. How did it go? I have never disobeyed your command. What's the last of the Ten Commandments? You shall not covet anything that is your neighbor's. You can hear the sin of the older brother, right? It's not just that he covets in this moment, but this reflects years of resentment built up, years of envy. Whatever the older son has felt and has nurtured, it is now bearing fruit, and he covets what his brother has given, and he is angry. And he thinks his years of faithful service entitle him to something. And he blames his father, and if this hasn't been made clear enough, he is lost. And so the father searches for him, invites him to come and to be found. Verse 31, and the father said to him, son, you are always with me, and all that is mine is yours. Right? What an embracing, all-inclusive promise of the presence of the father in his life. Everything that is mine is yours. It was fitting to celebrate and be glad for this brother, that this your brother was dead and is alive. He is lost and is found. Worst movie ending ever. Right? That's it. That's the final verse. Chapter 16 moves on to a completely new thing. That's it. Chapter 15 is just left hanging. This isn't three neatly packaged stories. It's four stories, but it's not exactly four stories. We don't know if the older brother ends up getting found. We don't know if there's an even bigger celebration because two sons were lost and are now found. We don't know if the angels get to throw a bonus party. We don't know how the older brother responds because Jesus is speaking to a group of older brothers. He's waiting for them to finish the story with their lives. Do you remember how the chapter opened? Notice who Jesus is with. Notice who is having a hard time celebrating along with heaven and earth. Who is still standing outside of the house angry, refusing to come in? Who is still lost and in need of being found in Jesus' life and world? Chapter 15, verse 1 starts, now the tax collectors, read rebel traitors, and sinners were all drawing near to hear Jesus. And the Pharisees and the scribes grumbled, saying, this man receives sinners and eats with them. To which Jesus' response is 3.5 stories. The moral of the first three stories is simple. You guys, heaven's busy rejoicing that sinners just like these are returning to God and they're listening to Jesus. They are already being found, and there's a party that you're invited to. But you, Pharisees and scribes, you claim to obey God, and you claim to be these righteous and holy representatives of God's will, but you're missing the very thing that God is doing right in front of you. Heaven and earth are celebrating. And you're busy grumbling. You're bitter. You're resentful. And you can't rejoice when God's grace demands it. So, question for you. Who is righteous? Who is really lost? Jesus has a hard message for some of us. If you've been in God's family for really any length of time, it doesn't take long. You are in danger of becoming the older son. It is just too easy to forget that the Father is with you and that all of these things are yours, to take them for granted. It's too easy to get caught up in working the Father's fields, to imagine that you're busy earning something, that you deserve something from the Father because of your labor. It's too easy to look at those coming in behind you, to hold them to a different standard and to judge. It's too easy to forget that Jesus came to seek and save those who are lost, because we forget that we were once lost, and we somehow start to convince ourselves, well, we were never really that lost. Not like the really lost people. But let's face it, the path of the older son is the easy path. It's the most natural path for us. But it always bears bad fruit. It bears the fruit of rivalry and envy, the fruit of bitterness and anger. But I think we have two safeguards against walking in the way of the older son. I don't want to say too much here, because to some extent I want to leave this open the way that Jesus does, as an invitation to you wherever you're at to hear and respond. But I do want to say something small. Two safeguards I think we have. First, we can stay connected to the vine, the true vine that is Christ. And we need to remember that serving God is not the same thing as communing with God. We have to stay connected to the source of life and love and joy if we expect to rejoice when we see God's grace. Connected to the vine, we will see all that's been given, and we'll confess where we've been sinners and fallen short, and our lives will be continually nourished by grace. And so stay connected to the vine. And second, we need to build structures and rhythms into our lives, a deliberate and purposeful effort to seek those who are lost and to celebrate their return. A good place to start would be the example of Jesus. He receives sinners and eats with them. And so what would it look like for us to build this into our lives, to practice receiving sinners and eating with them? And it just so happens, built into our Sunday morning gatherings, we do just that. A group of sinners get together, come around the table of Jesus, and we receive again and again and again the grace of Jesus. And we're reminded that we are sinners, invited to the table through grace alone. And so, with no official end to this morning's message, just a table calling to you, I ask you what the Spirit of God is doing in your heart and your life today.